This is the Saturday Night Live Friday speaker meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous held at Westgate West in San Jose, California on December the 22nd, 2000. Our speaker is Delia S. of Los Gatos, California. The original recording of this meeting is kept in the SNL tape library. Please observe the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes. Please do not break the anonymity of the speakers or any other AA member at the public level. Thank you.
My name is Delia, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 13th, 1985. First of all, I'd like to say welcome to the newcomers, and I really am glad that you're here, and I hope that sharing my experience, strength, and hope with you will do something for you. And if you look around the room, you'll see that there's a seat for one more person. So I'm very nervous tonight, but I know I'm in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, so I know that everything's going to be okay. Let me say, I was born into a very tense environment. My father is a heroin addict, and whether he's practicing or not now, it's none of my business. My mother is a codependent victim and an alcoholic. But I have to say, they did the best they could in raising me. And a lot of the time, as being parents, they just didn't know to know. So from the very start, from the very beginning, I was never really accepted because I was born into an Hispanic family, and the firstborn should be a boy, and I happen to be a girl, so they were a little bit disappointed. So from the get-go, I wasn't accepted. I went to elementary school. Once again, I really wasn't accepted because you don't speak Spanish, you don't speak English at home because you just don't, and you don't speak Spanish at school. And so I had a hard time reading, comprehending, picking up. I was teased and called names and picked on a lot. And I was always the last one to be picked to be put on the baseball team. So that was a little kind of a painful experience too. Then my reputation got really ruined when all the neighborhood kids came to the house and they saw the policeman come to pick up my father. That was something for everybody to talk about. When my father got out of prison, San Quentin, I guess he decided to make a geographical, and we moved. And we moved now into a neighborhood where there are doctors and lawyers and white-collar workers and FBI agents and just... these people just don't fit. I don't fit in this crowd. Now, I have to go to school with their children. So I decided that I was going to do really, really good in school, and I was going to get into sports, and I was going to do the best I could so that, you know, I could be accepted. In the meantime, at home, I had six brothers and sisters, and I was always the butt end of their mistakes. I was always the butt end of their mistakes. So when they did wrong, I always got in trouble. I was responsible for them. I know that today I know that God helped me and that God was in my life because, and I also know that alcoholism is a disease that centers in my mind because as a child, my father would beat me, and my mind would take me to very serene places, like running through the fields of flowers, or to the ocean, or to the beach, very serene places. And I could lay there until he was done and get up and wash up and clean myself and go on. Lots of times he would come home from the bars and he'd wake us up in the middle of the night and want us to clean the house and expected us to go to school. And then I would always get in trouble at school because I didn't want to dress for PE. And the people at school didn't understand that. And so that was a good reason for my father to get upset with me because I wasn't following the rules of the school. So now I'm in high school, and my father is a womanizer also. So he decides to find someone to live in, to move in with. And he moves and he leaves home. And I'm in the ninth grade now, and I'm so confused, I don't know what to do. So I'm trying to find a group that I can belong to. And I was too poor to be in the rich group. I was too dumb to be in the smart group. I was too, you know, I just didn't fit in. But I did find a group that I fit into. They weren't bad, but they weren't good either. And so now, I'm stealing and lying, stealing from my mother, cutting school, just getting in a lot of trouble. I didn't like to smoke pot because it depressed me, and I never wanted to try cocaine because I always felt that I would get addicted. And so I was okay there. But I did drink a lot, and the stuff that I drank was terrible because we were young and we could only get the small bottles out of the store. It was like, you know, Ripple and White Port and Mad Dog and Boone's Farm, just the cheap stuff. I mean, this is cheap stuff, and you would, you know, but it worked. And sometimes we would get somebody to buy us a six-pack, you know, but I never drank the beer. The guys did, or the other people did. And so I got tired of this kind of life, and I thought, well, you know what, I have an answer to this. I'm going to get married now, and I'm going to marry one of my alcoholic and drinking buddies. So I marry one of my alcoholic and drinking buddies, and we party, and we have a good time, and we do whatever. He joins the service, and we party with a lot of the service men, and also, this man knew that I was brought up in a very strict environment. So he allowed me basically to do whatever I wanted, to come in wherever I wanted, be wherever I wanted. I mean, he just, actually I've ran all over him and he just allowed it. So I got pregnant. I'm sure my son, my first child, got affected by the alcoholism that all the drugs and stuff that I took. And I got pregnant and I had him, and I'm sure that he got affected by my drinking. I got pregnant again and I stopped drinking. I thought I was going to stop drinking, I was going to stop smoking, I was going to stop everything because this baby wasn't going to be affected by the alcohol that I was taking. Well, now I'm 21. And, you know, I just had my little girl and it's time to go out and celebrate. So now I can drink, and I can smoke, and I can go to the bars, and I can hang out. And I don't have to drink those cheap drinks anymore. I can buy the expensive stuff, the brandy and the Southern Comfort, and just all the good stuff that you can buy in bars. So I enjoyed that. My husband got deathly ill. And the doctor told him, you're going to have to stop drinking and doing drugs or you're going to die. And so he asked me for a divorce, and he chose to go to drugs and drinking, and he eventually did die. So now I'm single again, and I'm having a good old time. I'm going to bars, and I'm going here and there, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing that. And I'm just having a good old time with my life, you know, not taking into consideration what I'm doing to my children. So I'm drinking a lot and going out a lot and everything, and I also get into this substance that allowed me to stay thin and to keep me working 16 12 to 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. And this was a perfect thing because I had two kids to support, I had bills, and the money, the extra money was really good. I just had to stay on this substance and everything would be okay. So along with that, I was drinking and doing whatever, you know, just drinking. So one day I went into the nurse because I was feeling, I work in a company, it's a production plant, and the work is very, it's labor, hard labor. And I went into the nurse and I told her, you know, when I do my job, I feel like I'm going to pass out or really faint, and I don't know what it's from. Well, she told me that, you know, I was too thin and that I needed to gain weight. If I gained 10 pounds, maybe I would feel a lot better. So this affected my mind, okay? Because now, what she's telling me that if I gain a little bit of weight, I could still do my job, and I could still do my job and still be at the weight that I want, kind of like close to the weight that I want to be. So, but now I have to figure out how much of this substance I can take where I won't get too fat. And how much of this substance I can take so that I can keep working the 12 hours a day. So this substance was kind of, I had to have a lot of control over this thing because, you know, I didn't want to get too fat, but I didn't want to stop working all the hours that I was working. So it was not good. So now I'm ready to settle down again. And I find a man who doesn't drink at all. He doesn't drink at all, and I'm thinking this is the answer to my prayers. He doesn't drink at all, so I'm not gonna be able to drink either. I get married, and like I said, he's the answer to my prayers, and he tells me that I can quit my job and I can stay home with my children, and you know, I can be a mother and a housewife, and I can be the thing that I've always wanted to be ever since I was 5 years old. And I said, oh my God, this is the answer to my prayers. This is what I always wanted. So I'm now a housewife. And, you know, you cook and you clean and you mop the floors and you iron and you take care of the children. But then what do you do with the rest of your time? So I started drinking. I started drinking again. And, I don't know. I just started drinking again. My son got into a fight with one of the boys down the street, and this lady came over and told me, you know, your son's this, your son's that. You know, you should be, you take care of your son. Da, da, da. I'm saying, okay, fine. You know, and then we settled that. And she had a glass of wine in her hand, and she said, well, why don't you come over and, you know, have a couple of glasses of wine? And I said, okay, fine. So I went over to her house, and she had a big old bottle of Red Mountain, and, you know, we had a couple of drinks, and she said, well, why don't you come over, and, you know, when you get done with your housework, and, you know, we can have a couple more drinks. I said, well, okay, fine, that sounds good. So she became my friend really fast. And then what happened was we came out with this solution. Like, if she would come over to my house and help me do all my housework, then if I would go to her house and do all her housework, we would have more time to drink. So, you know, we just figured that was perfect solution for it, you know. And that was really great. So after a year and 3 months of this, my husband says, you know what, I'm not putting up with this shit anymore. And I couldn't figure out what was wrong. I mean, I was staying home. I was being faithful. I was being loyal. I was cleaning the house. I was mopping. I was doing everything that a wife could possibly do. And he wants to leave. And I'm saying, okay, fine, go, you know. So now I'm divorced again. So now it's time to party. So so I'm partying, and I'm going to bars, and I met these Portuguese fellows, and they ended up being really, really good friends because they make homemade wine. And so they always give me these bottles of wine. It's tough, the stuff tastes nasty. But anyways, they would give me bottles of wine, and I really didn't have that much money to spend on booze and stuff, and I would go out drinking sometimes with them. And there was this one drink that I don't know what it's called, and I can't remember because I was so messed up, but I know that when you pour the drink on the table and you light a match to it, it turns a pretty blue. And they had it, and I thought at the time, you know, it looked so pretty on the table that it must feel very good going down. So I drank it. And I could drink a little bit, not very much, but I could drink a little bit because it was really, really strong. I don't know what, you know, basically, I forget what it's called. They told me, but I forget what it was called. So I'm doing all this ripping and roaring and running around, and okay, it's time for me to get single again. I mean, to get settled down again. So I marry a guy who just drinks beer. And I don't like beer. I don't like beer. I did it. And so this is the answer to my prayers. And, you know, this is the answer to prayers. He doesn't drink beer, and this is going to be okay. So besides, I needed a father. My kids were in their teens, and I needed a father for my kids. So, you know, I had to get married, right? So what happened was, is we drank and we partied a lot. We drank and we partied a lot. And then what happened is I got sick and tired of his drinking. I couldn't put up with it anymore. I'm just like, God, you know, this is sickening. But he did teach me how to drink beer, you know. So, I mean, you put ice in it and it's not bitter. And if you put V8 in it, it tastes like tomato juice, like a Coke. So, you know, so he did teach me how to drink it. So I learned, you know. But you know what? I was getting sick and tired of his drinking. And I went to another AA group. And I'll have to tell you, you can't fix yourself. You can't fix somebody else unless you fix yourself first. So I went to this group. My husband decided to stop drinking. Again, this is the answer to my prayers. I'm getting, you know, God is talking to me. And he decides to get sober. And he decides to get sober. But the company paid for his rehab, for his rehabilitation. So he has to go to 90 meetings in 90 days to pay them back for what they did. So he's going to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I'm figuring, you know what, I'm going to go and be the faithful, loyal, supporting, loving, caring wife that, you know, this man needs to have there for him. I'm going to be there for him. Well, this alcoholic does not go to 90 meetings in 90 days and not work the program. So now I have gone to 90 meetings in 90 days, and I am going crazy. My mind, once again, is working. I go back to the nurse and I tell her, you know what? Me and my husband, when we go out to drinking, I see these wine glasses, and the wine glasses are so huge. I mean, they're so big, really huge. They stand out. And the beer pitchers have foam on them. It's like a dog with rabies. They just, you know, just the foam is just rubbing, you know, running down. And I'm having these nightmares about drinking. See, because when you stop drinking, I stop drinking. Cool. So, and I'm having these nightmares about drinking. And when I go to come to work sometimes, when I'm driving, I can't focus on my driving because I'm just seeing, I'm getting attracted to all these liquor signs. My car, liquor signs. It was like liquor signs. And I'm saying, you know, and she calls the ambulance, and she calls the ambulance and takes me to a 72-hour hold unit. And I said, okay, so now I'm going to be held here for 72 hours. So the man next door comes over and he says, Delia, have you ever thought that maybe you were an alcoholic? And I said, no, I'm not an alcoholic. Now, my father is an alcoholic, and I despise my father, and I don't want to be anything like him. And he says, well, we're going to transfer you to the unit next door. And I said, I'm not going there. I don't want to go there. And he goes, well, you know, your employer's not going to take you back unless you go there and complete the program. So I said, okay. So I went to the program. I learned about the disease. I studied a disease. They took me to the 12 by 12. I learned the program. I met a lot of people in the program. When I left, it was really fun. And the first thing I had to do when I left is get a sponsor, and I did. I got a sponsor. I worked the steps. I did everything I was told, and it was really, really good. My life was turning out good for the first time, and you know, and in this case, I wasn't thinking that this was the answer to my solution. This was, you know, this was it. This was great. This was going to be good. So what happened was I did that for 3 years, and my life was really going good. Now, this husband of mine, he's sober. He's not going to the meetings, and he don't got no sponsor, and he's not calling nobody, and he's not doing any of this stuff. So you know what? And he's staying sober. So why can't I? You know, why can't I? So what happened was I stopped going to meetings. I stopped reading my big book, calling my sponsor, and doing everything and living life the way normal people live. So life kept getting worse and worse and worse, and really, really bad. Your attitude comes back, the anger and the rage comes back. To me, in my disease, I had blackouts. I couldn't remember where I was going or where I got, or how I got where I was, had gotten. My daughter tells me I did things to her that I don't even remember that I did. I do know remember that my daughter left when she was 13 because she could not tolerate me or put up with me anymore. But I wasn't drinking. I couldn't understand it. So the alcohol disease was creeping up on me, and I didn't even realize it. I didn't even know what was happening. I really didn't. So then I started losing my marriage. I'd already lost my kids. I lost my son when he was 13, and I started getting sober. He didn't like me wanting me to get sober because of the fact that he could no longer manipulate and control me now. So he wasn't going to stay with me, and he decided to leave. And so if you can't get what you want, you can't manipulate me and control me, then he just left. And I have to, sorry to say that. He's out there now, and he's homeless, and I've worked really good on the 12 steps to learn to let him go. Okay, but it took the 12 steps, a lot of hard work, working with my sponsor, coming to meetings and talking to a lot of people to do that. So my daughter is left home, and I'm losing my marriage, I'm losing everything. Everything is just disappearing. And I'm running out of solutions. I'm running out of answers. So 10 years go by. And after 10 years, I am so miserable. I'm so angry. I'm so hateful. I don't even like myself. I don't know what's wrong with me. But I had a really good program. I had a really good foundation. My sponsor gave me everything she had. I didn't believe in God, but she said, you know, pretend as if you had a God. Here, you can have my God. I'll share my God with you. And she was a Christian, so she had a lot of faith in God. And she put that faith in me. And she also told me, there was one thing that she also told me, but well, was a couple of things she told me too. You know, you can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. This was one night when she really got mad at me. So you can do whatever you want if you're willing, only if you're willing to pay the consequences. If you're willing to pay the consequences, you can do whatever you want, don't you? And I can understand why she was getting mad at me. I don't know. I just quit doing everything. There was also three other things that she told me. She told me, you know, you do the steps, you go to meetings, you work the program, you pray, you meditate, you do, you know, do all the things the program is asking you to in the big book. But you must always remember to keep a good sense of humor, not to take things up so seriously, and to have fun. So that's been helping me a lot. So up until I stopped drinking. So, I mean, I stopped going to meetings, and I left her. And I was dry now. And after about 10 years, I was dry, and I was messed up. I was losing my home. I was losing my house. I was really messed up bad. So now, what happened was I was really messed up now. So, you know, I knew that the answer to my problem was coming to AA, because that could make me happy, joyous, and free. That was the answer. If I just went back to AA, I know that things would change. Well, that didn't work. And it didn't work because everybody was talking about doing the steps and reading the big book and talking to the sponsors about not drinking. And this is all well and good for these people. But I didn't have a problem not drinking because I wasn't drinking. I had a problem. I just wanted to die. And I couldn't get up in front of those people and tell them that I just wanted to die. I was so miserable. You know, because I just couldn't get up and tell them that. This program is for telling people, you know, how you want to drink and stuff like that. So I just couldn't get up there and tell them that I just wanted to die. So one day, I just wanted to die. So I have a therapist at this time, and I'm living in Modesto, and I'm driving home one night, and it's a big old semi in front of us, and I was thinking, Jesus, if I could just ram into that semi, I know everything would be okay. The only thing that stopped me is that my son was in the car, and I didn't want anything to have to hurt my son. I was lucky that he even wanted to spend time with me at that time. So, stupid me, I told my therapist what I was thinking. And I told her, and I told her what I was feeling, what I was thinking. And she walks out of the room and she asks me, would you like a cup of coffee? And I said, yeah, you know, bring me a cup of coffee, you know. I said, you know, shouldn't we talk about what I just, you know, finished telling you? And she goes, well, would you like a cup of coffee? And I said, okay. So she brought me in a cup of coffee. And she said, Delia, if you had to go someplace for a little while, would someone be able to handle your affairs? And I said, yeah, I wouldn't have any problem with that. So I figured she wanted me to go someplace, go on a vacation, you know, take it. Take it easy, you know. You know, go out, have fun. You know, and not to take this what I said so seriously, right? And it was hard to have a sense of humor at that time, though. So what happened was she says, well, I'm going to get a hold of your daughter, and I'm going to have her take you to a 72-hour hold in Redwood City. And I said, I'm not going. I've been through that already. I'm not going to go through it. She goes, you know, you have to go through it, and you're going to have to go through it. You're going to have to go there, and you're going to have to go through the 72-hour hold and rehabilitation center. I said, okay. Now I was there for 72 hours, and I was ready to go. They told me, why don't you stay a couple more days and attend some AA meetings? I said, well, okay. You know, that's what it means for me to get out of here. I'll do it. So I went to a couple AA meetings, and after that, work was just not cooperating. They told me I couldn't go back to work because, you know, they didn't feel that I was all together yet. You know, I don't think my therapist or my psychiatrist had anything to do with it. I mean, I don't think they were helping at all. So, so I have to go to this 90-day program now. It's 90 days before I can go back to work. So I go back to work. I complete this 90-day program, and I go back to work. They teach me how to come back to the program. They walk me through the steps, to read the big book, and do what I needed to do to get back on my feet. And when I came into the program, I had to give up everything. I had to give up everything in order to keep my sobriety. I had to give up my husband. I had to give up my cars. I had to give up my marriage. I had to give up my children. I had to give up every single thing. And that was hard. It was really hard. Because now I'm in a divorce, and I'm trying to fight for everything that I've been working for and that I'm entitled to and that I should have. I should have at least half. But that's not the way it works. You have to give up everything for your sobriety. So I said okay, and I gave it up. And I had a sponsor, a friend who was in the program, and she was like a temporary sponsor. She helped me through the divorce, and she helped me through. But what happened was she became too close to me. We became friends, and she could not no longer sponsor me, because she was now my friend instead of a sponsor. And she just, you can't make a sponsor your friend, and you can't have your friend a sponsor. There's two different things. They're two different things. And so she became a sponsor to me, a friend to me. And we got really close, and we did things together. And like I said, she helped me through the divorce and everything else. I decided, well, I was going to come to Saturday Night Live. When I first came to the program, when I first came, very first time, long time in '85, I came to room 47, Saturday Night Live, and it was a good group, I thought. People were okay. And now I come back 10 years later, and there's a lot of the people that I saw then, you know. And I'm coming back, and I decide, well, I've got to do this all over again. I've got to give up everything that I have, and I got to do this all over again. Because if I don't do this all over again, I'm going to end up right back where I was and be as miserable and as ugly and as awful as I was as I just came in. So I got me a sponsor here. She took me through the 12 steps. And believe you me, I could not wait to get through my 12 steps. I wanted to do 1, 2, and 3. I couldn't wait to get over through 4. And I wanted to share everything with as quickly and as fast as I could in step 5, because I wanted to get through, because I knew that if I didn't do these things, I knew what would happen to me. You know. And sometimes fear, it can be bad, but sometimes fear can be good. Because I was so afraid that I didn't want to be miserable again. I wasn't afraid that I would go back out there because I didn't drink. I was just afraid that I was going to be miserable. And if I did continue to be miserable, I know I probably would have drank, because there wouldn't have been no other way to get out. So I come to these meetings and I do the steps. I make a lot of friends. I do what's suggested. I had a hard time, like I said, comprehending and reading, so the big book was a little bit difficult for me. I learned from the podium that come to the big book meetings, and they read a paragraph out of the big book, and they explain it, and they talk about it, and they share their experience, strength, and hope on it, and eventually, you get the hang of it. Just keep coming to the big book meetings if you're having a hard time reading it. Another person suggested, if you have having a hard time reading the book, get some tapes and read along with the book. So I went and got some tapes and I read along with the book. And I read along with the book. And I kept listening to what the people said in these rooms. And I don't know, everything started to change. I learned that I could be happy. I learned that I had to live and let live. I had to take it easy sometimes. I had to call people. I had to pray. I had to be there for somebody else if they needed me or wanted me. And you know, I've never really been wanted. And I've never been really needed. But I am here today. And I've been given a lot of gifts. And a lot. When I sponsor, when I first came into the program, the slogan "Think, Think, Think" is not a very good one because it's not a good one. You gotta avoid that one. So I avoided that one. But for the grace of God is another one. And I just got a lot of gifts, a lot of things. People were saying things. You know, they weren't giving materialistic things, but they were giving things that I could cherish for the rest of my life if I wanted to. And the choice is mine. It's only mine and nobody else's. When I was out there, I can remember that I asked God to help me many, many times. And maybe I just wasn't listening. Today I ask God to help me, and I pray and I meditate, and I do sometimes get the answers. Actually, I do get the answers. And if I don't, I put it in a God box and leave it alone, and sooner or later it's going to be taken care of, you know? So it's none of my business. Just leave it alone. The other thing that I learned was when I was drinking, I would hang out at the bars and I would tell people my problems and I would drink and I would, you know, sob and cry on their shoulders, and they didn't give a damn. They didn't care. You know, I come here today and I can tell my problems, I can tell my solutions, I can tell my problems, I can cry on people's shoulders, and these people care. They'll go out of their way to care for me. And there was just so many things that I did out there that I can do today still, but I just have to turn them around. I have to make that 180 degree turnaround. I have to change my life. I've changed my life a lot. There's still a lot that I have to do and a lot that I have to change. But right now, I don't care how much I have to change and how much I have to do, as long as I'm happy, joyous, and free, and I have the people in these rooms to hang on to and to go to and be with. And same for me. I have to be there for them. They're not there. If I'm not there for them, you know, I might as well just give it up. There's just so many other things that I have learned in this program that have helped me get through things. The things that people say at the podium, they share, and all I have to do is listen. And sit there and listen. Sometimes I have to put my 2 cents in, but maybe it'll help somebody. And if it doesn't, that's okay. I know it helped me by saying what I had to say. There's a lot of things that have helped me, and the gifts that I've received here are so overwhelming. Now I have parents and 6 brothers and sisters. They don't believe that I have any problem. They don't believe I have a problem at all. They didn't see it when I was younger. They didn't see it when I was in my teens. And they didn't see it as I was growing up. So they don't understand that I should have a problem. So they get a little upset because I don't go on the holidays, spend time with them. But for the first couple of years, I had to give them up too in order to keep my sobriety. I had to hang on to my sobriety. I had to give up everything. So after a while working with my sponsor and everything else, I was able to go and have Christmas and birthday parties with my family. When it became too much for me, I had to learn to take care of myself and leave and walk away and maybe go to a meeting, call somebody, or do something to take care of myself. I needed to take care of myself. There's a lot of people that come and go here, and like I said, this is a big, big room. There's always room for one more. And I hope that I said something that might touch somebody, because I know what I said here today may not have helped you, but I know it helped me by sharing it. So thank you very much, and if you're new, keep coming back.